All right, in studio now, it's great to have Lauren Cohn. Nice to have you here. Lauren Cohn, of course, a television and radio personality here in the city of Chicago. She is now the co-host of In the Loop, WYCC, which is every Thursday night at 7
Thank
o'clock.
Thank you very much for that. And it again, airs again on weekends.
It airs again on the weekend.
I have to say that.
And Ray Long is back. We just had you here on Tuesday. It's good to see you.
Good
I don't
to
usually
be here
get
again.
To see you this, yes. this often.
Yes, it'll be a habit.
Investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune and former Springfield chief, bureau chief for the Tribune for years. All right, so we're going to talk a little politics. You know, all eyes, of course, on Donald Trump and the national election. But there were some storylines that came out of Chicago and the state of Illinois. And also, you know, frankly, news just keeps coming. I mean, today, Tony Preckwinkle and the Cook County Board pass a soda tax. Now, this is not just sort of like, oh, we'll put a couple extra pennies on top of it. This is sort of a move almost in the spirit of what we've seen with cigarettes and alcohol in the county of Cook. What's your first take on the idea of this passing and passing so narrowly?
Good time to do it when you got the votes and hope that nobody notices real quickly because everybody's still in the aftermath of the Trump effect. And so she had the votes or she wouldn't have introduced it, right? And so she pulled it off and pulled the trigger before anybody changed their mind.
The problem, the perception here is that the politicians put this off is that they're doing this for everybody's health. You know, we're going to put a tax on sweetened beverages. And I'm a holistic health coach. A lot of people don't know that. I'm all for kale chips, but I don't think we pick and choose what we're going to tax. Because if you're going to tax sweetened beverages, then you got to tax candy bars and cookies and cakes. So this is really just another way to get revenue. And we've got the water tax. We've got the amusement tax. You resell your tickets, you get a tax on that. Now, it's just another attempt to gain revenue. The politicians don't care about your health.
But they're using it as sort of like a cover. I mean, in the way to say this is a health tax, this is something that's going to make our county, but it really is just a way to get some more revenue to the county.
Absolutely, I think so. I mean, look, we have an obesity problem in this country, no question about it. We have bloated health costs in this country. Education is what is going to help people make right choices. But you, Ray and Justin, you know to eat your fruits and vegetables. You know that sugar is bad for you. You know that you can gain weight. So by taxing people, we haven't seen any scientific evidence or any studies in these other cities that they've done this with, even in Mexico, that this suddenly brings down or changes the obesity epidemic or costs. So I don't think we're suddenly going to see a surge of people drinking water and suddenly losing weight and living healthier lives.
But they could make an argument. They could make an argument if it costs more money, not unlike cigarettes is a good example, that maybe the habitual use of that product will dwindle.
It could. And some of the studies have shown that in such a minimal amount, but people could also wait for sales. And again, I just don't think the government should be picking and choosing. You know, then why not things with preservatives?
Yeah,
and
right.
Why not, you know, the cakes and the, I mean, there's plenty of things you and I could walk through the grocery store and say, hey, you know, why don't
Pretty
you tax that,
whole,
Tony? Because
yeah.
you'll have a whole
right.
lot more money. And there might not be so much money coming in for federal dollars. You might need it pretty
yeah,
soon.
Right, absolutely. You know, politically, Ray, what I find really interesting about today is that the Cook County Board, not unlike City Council, they vote pretty much rubber stamp. You're not getting a lot of controversy off this. This was one that came down to the wire where the actual president had to cast a vote for it to pass.
Yeah.
Did you think she knew that going in? I mean, when you say she had the votes, do politicians, do presidents like Tony Preckwinkle, do they have that information before they start?
She probably knew whether she would have to cast it or if she was going to be a possibility. She can count noses. She was in the city council beforehand, so she knew what to do and how to present it. Whether she knew she was going to be the final vote, I'm not sure. I don't know. I haven't talked to her. But this kind of tax, I think Lauren is right. This is really one of these things that they're seeking new revenue. But I'm amazed that I have heard since the 1980s the idea of having a Twinkie tax, for example,
yeah, right,
in the
right.
state of Illinois, and they never get the guts to do it. They get so much blowback when they do things in Springfield, for example, to pass a higher cigarette tax. That's a tough vote to get people to do.
Well, we're so desperate for money, and you know, if we would just fix some of the bigger problems like the pension issue and other things like that, we wouldn't need to make these little taxes.
Right.
for, you know, to gain revenue. That's the pathetic state that we're in.
I mean, I haven't paid that close attention to this story. And I mean, I guess that's probably indicative of everybody in the, with an election and everything else going on. Where is the money for, where does Tony Preckwinkle want this money to go? Is this just general operating? Is this to pay down the pension? What is it about a revenue from a soda tax that the county needs so much?
Well, it's supposed to gain $224 million for her to plug some holes in there. And she says that, you know, it's not her first choice, et cetera, but it's going to provide revenue that they need to avoid cuts elsewhere, which is the old thing that they always say when they get a pass a tax,
right?
Oh, we're going to hurt public safety, et cetera. That's one of the things she said.
She
public
preached
health,
to save jobs, right, Ray? Didn't she preach it
well,
to save
course,
jobs?
Yes.
And then the other thing that she did was with the board members is she said, I'm going to give you $500,000 if you sort of vote my way to do whatever you want with transportation.
Yeah.
That came out, you know, about a week ago. I mean,
so
pay to play.
Yeah.
Hello.
I love
we've
those
all,
pork
we've
girl.
All spent so much time here between the three of us that... What's a shocker anymore?
Yeah, what is a shocker? Lauren Cohn and Ray Long in studio with me. The other big story today, I'm surprised at the way this kind of has played out, but an indictment for Aaron Schock. Aaron Schock's defense team's coming out and saying, well, Aaron Schock is going to be indicted. He speaks and says he's going to take on the investigators. He's going to prove to the world that he's been wronged by this investigation that spent millions and millions of dollars trying to drum up a story that's not real.
Yeah, well, okay. I will say this about the Central Illinois District, because I covered them for years. They have gone into a heavy-duty precision mode. So when they bring something, they don't just have, you know, circumstantial evidence. A lot
right.
of times they've got reams and reams. I was stunned at how much it had changed in the last 20 years. For example, when Governor Edgar's pals were indicted in this whole MSI scandal back in the 90s, you know, you had to explain all these numbers. They didn't have projectors. It was kind of confusing. The jury didn't convict everybody, right? But now you go up there, there was this pal of Obama's golfing buddy who was in trouble, and he gets down there, and they've got, like, you know, pages. They can just click it and move it around. It's just amazing how much they've done with the spreadsheets and everything over the years.
It is. I mean, Aaron Schock, of course, this story is one that we've paid attention to because he was a rising star in the Republican Party who was undone by scandals that were head-scratchers. You know, Katy Perry tickets and expense reports that were too much, that were very sort of extravagant.
He likes Downton Abbey. I mean,
he likes Downton Abbey.
The guy for that. I mean, he put pictures of his pecs on social media. What do you expect?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a governor that's being indicted. I mean, maybe we're a little diverting from what we're used to here in Illinois. I mean, maybe this takes a little bit away from the shadow of governors behind bars. But look, I mean, he was a rising star. He raised a lot of money, and now he's calling it accounting errors. You know,
right.
when you're talking about accounting errors
yeah.
with mileage, and obviously,
yeah.
you know, he
right.
hasn't been convicted, so, you know, we have to be careful here. But is anybody really shocked by
Is anybody shocked by Aaron Schock?
Shocked. But they've also got things like too much money for taking a private plane from Peoria to D.C. just so it would save him a little time, you know, mixing government money for trips and then paying part of the trips with political funds and then, you know, dipping in here and dipping in there.
And you know,
sooner
to be
or later,
fair, we've seen other politicians in the same area. I wouldn't say the same things that happened with Aaron Schock. Jesse Jackson Jr. comes to mind.
Yeah.
That this is
yeah.
something that, you know, that the government is not going to tolerate and is going to throw the book at people who are going to misuse funds, especially when it comes to public funds, campaign funds.
But, you know, what just happened in the presidential election, which was a slap to the political establishment heard across the world, is a wake-up call, I think, to all these politicians. You know, if you look at the viewpoint of Hillary Clinton, elitist, the headlines, crooked, liar, you look at what we have here in Illinois, you look at what we have in city politics, and there's such this discontent and this mistrust for politicians.
Right.
You know, they have a wake-up call now after what happened in this election.
Well, anyone who's worked in it, Ray, I know you've been, and we'll take a break here, but, I mean, you know, expense reports, living off the the Springfield lamp. That's part and parcel to being a politician, and something that I feel is we act surprised, but it's not new.
Yeah, one of the things that came out in the George Ryan trial, that's a convicted governor who's out of prison right now, not to be confused with the governor who's in prison right now, Rod Blagojevich. But during Ryan's whole episode over there, they were talking about how he never made a withdrawal from his bank account for years. So you're wondering, gee, where's that money coming from?
Exactly. Ray Long, former Springfield bureau chief of the Chicago Tribune, now an investigative reporter with the paper. Lauren Cohn, who is a co-host of WYCC's In the Loop, which is on Thursdays and rebroadcast on the weekend. My guest tonight as we break down the election. Let's take a break. We'll come back and let's talk about the impact of Donald Trump as president and how it plays to Illinois politics. The mayor, the Cook County Board president, the governor, not necessarily in Donald Trump's camp, and we know how he likes to sort of get revenge. So we'll see how that may play out coming up here with a Trump presidency. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, in studio with me, Ray Long, Lauren Cohn. We're talking politics, of course, breaking down the election here in the state of Illinois. Before we get to the big story, which is about the supermajority and who's the winners, Republicans or Democrats, when it comes to Springfield in the state of Illinois, let's talk about the Trump effect here. Obviously, Chicago and the state of Illinois was blue, although we talked about it, if you go south of almost the split to the state. I mean, it's a red and blue state. But this, the leaders of the Republican Party were defiant of Donald Trump. Does that play as we start talking about pork projects or Illinois standing when it comes to a Trump campaign? I mean, is that something that is going to hurt the state of Illinois?
Well, my gut feeling is you have to see how Trump, you know, matures on this whole issue of whether you can whack somebody around. You know, you have to remember the old Richard J. Daley used to say, yeah, downstaters, if you're Democrats, take me on, beat me up if it wins you votes, right? But I don't know that Donald Trump is going to be looking at it like that. So he still may have some of this retribution fire in his belly.
That's his business side,
I think he does. I mean, I've covered Donald Trump in the late 80s. I was a field producer in New York for one of my first jobs, and I was with Donald Trump. I went behind the scenes at Celebrity Apprentice. Wow. I know you're both jealous about that assignment.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, this is the same guy that we saw that offended just about every sector of the population when he ran. I mean, you don't know what he's going to do behind closed doors. He can come out and he can shake hands and say nice things about Hillary Clinton and President Obama today. He's a chameleon, and in the next minute go and say, this state didn't vote for me, this state didn't vote for me, forget the funding. And I think he will. I think he will look at Illinois. I think that's going to be a problem for the governor, and I think it's obviously going to be a problem considering the nature of the relationship between Mayor Emanuel and the Clintons and the president. But I do think Governor Rauner has a real problem on his hands because he got 4 seats in the House. He got 2 seats in the Senate. He's going to still spar with Madigan. But if he really wants to run again, what about those downstate voters? Those are Trump voters.
Right. And he has to. Great point. Yeah. He has to reach out to them in some way. Now, he's been doing things downstate by trying to open up a facility here or there to try to get people, put some salve on some of the wounds down there. But he has to strike a balance between trying to appease a real Kentucky-style electorate down there in deep southern Illinois and trying to win over suburbanites who, you know, care about gun control, too. There are obviously suburbanites who are NRA backers, but, you know, there's that belt of suburban women who could be swayed one way or another, too.
Well, and he's got a Democratic wife who's probably appalled by the things that, you know, Donald Trump has said, like many women are. And so what do you do? He won't even say his name out loud right now in terms of making a statement about winning the presidency.
Yeah, I wonder as well. I mean, the sort of theatrics that the Chicago alderman did about removing the honorary street sign. And you could tell that Donald Trump has had relations with Chicago and Illinois politicians in the past. He wouldn't have been able to get this beautiful building here with his big name on it without sort of, you know, making sure that he had the right people around him. I mean, what about the kind of theatrics that we saw from Democrats, from Chicago aldermen that were intended to embarrass Donald Trump?
I think they'll go with the wind. If the wind blows in a way that they think it could be bad for them, them, then they'll go with whatever other direction that is. If it means putting up the sign again or taking it down or, you know, voting to keep it up or whatever the status of the sign is right now, then they will go that direction if it's the most popular way to go.
And I think that that's one of the reasons why people are scared right now. It's not so much that we have a Republican president or we have, you know, the Republican Congress and what's going to happen. I think it's the unknown. It's what is a Donald Trump presidency, and then how does that resonate all the way down to our state and local officials? Nobody knows. The markets are reacting, you know, terrifically because they think, oh, the word deregulation and the lower taxes are great for the markets, the housing market. But are we really going to see jobs? How is the economy going to change? And we don't know.
Right. Well, he's going to make America great again.
Ray. I forgot, Ray. I hadn't heard that in about 10 minutes. That's right.
Lauren Cohen, Ray Long in studio with me. We're talking politics. When we come back, let's talk about Springfield, the supermajority, who actually won. I'm also interested, Ray, you know a lot of the politicians, the senators and the representatives who were ousted.
Who are
leaving. And just what Springfield loses, what Springfield gains with their departure. Talk about that coming up here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Welcome back. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This here is The Download. Very excited to have in studio Lauren Cohen. She's the co-host of WYCC's In the Loop, which you can see every Thursday night at 7 o'clock. But also, you can see it rebroadcast over the weekend.
Yes.
Of course, a news, television, and radio personality for years here in Chicago. Ray Long, an investigative reporter with the Chicago Tribune, also former Springfield bureau chief. Do you miss it down there?
Well, you know, I'm not missing it a whole lot right now. Yeah.
Well, before we get to Springfield, I want to talk about it. You know, Donald Trump, Peaches told me, you know, put out this tweet 8:19 p.m. One of the first that he's had since President Lexington. Great campaign. I just ran a great campaign for president. Now professional protesters stoked by the media. Unfair. So here we go in this kind of like, this is what we were warned. We were sort of waiting for. What's the tenor going to be? Is it going to be campaign-like? Is it going to be presidential-like? What are we going to see from Donald Trump? What does that tweet or the tenor of that tweet, the tone, tell you, Ray?
Stoked by the media. Stoked by the media. That's what everybody wants to say. The media's fault is this. Media's fault is that. I mean, Hillary Clinton's crew came out today saying, you know, it was James Comey, the FBI director, who talked about the emails that she actually had in her house and, you know, on her homebrew set. And, you know, the timing, of course, was a problem, obviously.
Right,
but
right.
But then they also said, well, and the media just didn't cover Donald Trump enough. Well, you know, all the stuff. Yeah, all the stuff that was reported about him, ranging from the foundations and his not giving to all of his various other financial entanglements. Where did they get that? They got it from the media.
Yeah.
Well, and this is Donald Trump. I mean, this is one minute he's coming out and he's humble. I'm so humble, and Hillary Clinton's so fantastic, and he meets with the president today. And by the way, I got a little distracted when he was meeting with the president because did you know that the color of Donald Trump's hair is the exact same color as the paper on the wall behind President Obama
wow.
in that room? It's like
wow.
this gold yellow with the stripes. I'm sorry. I got a little distracted. And so, so he then was all nice and, you know, this beautiful moment, and then now he's tweeting. He's back to his other personality again, and he's so many personalities, it's hard to keep up. So we have multiple people now in the Oval Office.
There was a lot made of the media's lack of coverage of how angry the country was.
Yeah.
You saw this a lot, that they missed it, the polls missed it, the media missed it. There's even John Cass today had the column about it was the media that stoked the flames of that anger, meaning it was all about they kept the more pointing and mocking of Trump and Trump supporters just got him more emboldened and more upset with the country, and it forced them to the polls, or it got them motivated them to go to the polls. I'm interested in that concept, the whether or not you feel like the media missed the story.
Well, I think that the media missed the story in that they didn't capture the anger out there enough. Now, I have been saying for a long time here that this is not your mother's electorate, and there is a lot of rage out there. But when you say the media, you say a one size fits all.
Yeah, right.
So
that's where it gets difficult,
so yeah, if somebody goes out and does a great story about the rage out there, or talks about the rage out there, you know, and then everybody else doesn't, then, you know, it's everybody's fault because you're part of the media. I also think that there's something called Fox News, and that is media, and that also has a fairly big audience, last time I checked, and they were stoking a lot of things up, too.
But, you know, he's a master manipulator of the media.
Oh, yeah.
And so part of this is that. And then part of it, if you look at if you look at the anger, you know, where's the anger directed to? I mean, the anger was directed towards 8 years post-recession of the president, Obama. The anger is towards, well, we're going to have 4 more years with Hillary Clinton. You know, this was maybe not a vote for Donald Trump. We like Donald Trump. This was an anger of, you know, what's happened in this country. People don't have jobs. The median household income is $56,000, and it hasn't changed. Our taxes are high. You know, the cost of living is going up. The rich are getting richer. The Affordable Care Act played a huge role in the last few weeks in fueling, you know, people's anger over premiums.
The bump up,
there was a lot of things, you know, fueling this anger in this country. And that's why I said earlier in the show, Justin, this is a wake-up call for politicians everywhere on either side of the aisle.
Well, let me ask you, because I agree with you 100% with the idea that there was an electorate that voted for the policies, not necessarily for the candidate. And we kind of almost saw it in a strange way. We talked about this, too, on election night, right? The idea of, are you voting for a candidate or against another candidate? In this case, Donald Trump, you know, it's hard to separate. And you're seeing a lot of people today, we saw last night with protests and others, really sort of having a hard time separating the policies and the person and the personality. Women are, I mean, this is something that I think is somewhat unprecedented in the way that there's a lot of emotion around the idea that not only did the female candidate not win, but that 52% of white women voted for a candidate like Donald Trump. I mean, when you see those kind of numbers and you feel that emotion, what's your reaction to it?
Well, I was really actually surprised considering all the offensive things he said to women. And I have women friends that are well-educated women who voted for him. And that shocked me. It really did. And I'm not, you know, saying it for a candidate either way. I found that surprising. A lot of Latinas, after what he said, and he called, you know, Mexicans rapists, voted for Donald Trump. I think a lot of that wasn't a vote for him. I think it was a vote against having Hillary Clinton be 4 more years of President Obama. I really do.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think there was a general throw the bums out rage out there, too. Mm, and so I think there was a vote rage. If there could have been just a one vote button that said rage on it, there would have been a lot of people pushing that button. But you also have to look at her overall candidacy, too, when you dissect her campaign. She came out of the box a person who had a lot of people throughout the country who despised her. Mm-hmm. And so you have to start from that position. You're not starting from zero like Bernie Sanders basically did and then moved up. She was already starting with a lot of unfavorables,
if you will. Yeah, she lost me when she said we couldn't pay our mortgages.
Well, I mean,
she was not a likable candidate. She came off as an elitist. The things about the email, she didn't do much on issues to say, oh, I have this great economic plan or I have this great thing to take care of, you know, the Affordable Care Act at all. I will say what's going to be interesting about, you know, the fear right now is we don't know what this is. You know, he has 70 or 80 days we know how that he can fire people, but who's he going to hire? He's got to hire 4,700 people. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
And I will say this, just one point. I hope he doesn't give Governor Chris Christie the Department of Transportation. I think that would be a bad idea. And I think maybe Billy Bush should get a job because look at the dichotomy there. Poor Billy Bush lost.
Poor Billy Bush.
He loses his job. Yeah, he walked away with $10 million.
Mm. Yeah.
But then the other guy on the tape becomes president of the United States. Something's going on there.
And Lauren Cohen, Ray Long in studio with me. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll do what we set out to do, which is talk Springfield. Who are the winners, Republicans or Democrats, when it comes to down ballot here in the state of Illinois? Stay with us. It's a download here at 720 WGN. In studio with me, Lauren Cohen and Ray Long. We were talking about the election on Tuesday, of course, a lot about Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and national. But the state of Illinois, I mean, we saw so much money thrown into the disgusting ads that ran all. I mean, it was unbelievable how many the sort of buzzwords they were using to throw negative ads at state representatives, you know, like the point where I was like, let's turn the channel
stop.
When I'm watching with my son. I'm like, these are issues I want to talk about. But talk about, you know, we talked about this to be a proxy war between Mike Madigan and Bruce Brown, Republicans and Democrats. Who won?
Oh, nobody won. The people lost. We know that. The public lost. But what we saw in raw numbers were things like Susana Mendoza, who is aligned with Michael Madigan but is a Democrat on her own and can speak well on her own and can do things on her own. And I watched as a legislator in Springfield, she beat Leslie Munger, yeah. the sitting appointed comptroller. And that was viewed as the statewide proxy fight, right? But I kind of feel that Susana had a leg up in that one anyway. She'd run citywide. She'd been in the legislature a while. Munger had only been there for a little over a year. So I think that she didn't have the name recognition. And there were people who were voting rage against Rauner on that, but man, you're asking people to take two or three steps down the ballot and think it through. You know, I think Susana won that partly on her own as much as it was a proxy war.
But you bring up a good point when you talk about the money. I mean, Leslie Munger received a lot of money from Governor Rauner, and I agree that she was, you know, relatively unknown. She was not as feisty as Susana Mendoza. That was a nasty battle. Mm-hmm. That really was a nasty battle if you watched it. And so there was a lot of money put into that. And that says something about, you know, when we say, you know, can money buy votes? But yet they put a lot of money, I mean, an unprecedented amount of money. And Governor Rauner did get 4 seats in the House and 2 in the Senate. So I go back and forth with can money buy votes and can money buy elections? On one hand, yes. On one hand, no. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was real interesting here. I'm just looking at a report here run out by the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform today, and they were tallying about $9.8 million spent for Munger, or at least received by Munger, and $2.7 for Mendoza. So that's a race for comptroller to get
yeah.
$12 million.
And what's a comptroller anyway,
right?
Right,
right.
Can you explain
right.
what a comptroller is?
Well,
we've
talked about
we've
it.
All night.
I will say, I mean, you kind of enlightened me, Ray, on election night, that the comptroller actually has a very distinct political purpose, and that is which bills to prioritize. We've seen social services and not-for-profit agencies be at the bottom of that list with a Republican-run comptroller, Leslie Munger. Does that change? I mean, obviously bills are not going to get paid without a budget. But the ones that do get paid, do they change the priority with Susana Mendoza?
Well, the ones that rise to the top could very well change. But you have to still strike a balance because you have to not be crazy about it, right? Otherwise, people are going to call you out and see that you're really picking only your friends. And so one thing that Munger did was put the lawmakers' paychecks at the back of the stack, at the bottom of the stack, and Mendoza has said the same thing too. She's kind of doubled down and made it even more promises to make it even tougher to get lawmakers paid. And it's always easy to pick on lawmakers too, and it's always popular.
And unfortunately, though, for Munger, what happened was she got tied up in this sort of Rauner image of we're not going to, you know, pay down certain services and certain organizations that are struggling out there, that, you know, needy organizations. And so, you know, Leslie Munger got caught in that. I mean, she was appointed to this position, and it was sort of a disastrous from the beginning. There was really no way to go. And yeah, she did stand it up and say, I'm not going to, you know, pay, you know, the legislators. And, you know, they cried about that. I actually on election night went right to Susana Mendoza after she won. And I said, how are you going to work with Governor Rauner? She's like, I'm not afraid to stand up to him. And she went down her route of, you know, even billions of dollars can't win. And I said, yeah, but that's not the point. You have to work with the governor here.
Right.
You have
that's
to.
Your job, right? That is the definition of the job. Okay, so let me ask you guys. I mean, you know, we have this sort of Band-Aid spending plan. It's not even a budget that's in place. The veto session starts next week. Obviously, that won't have the new the new people yet. But I mean, do we see in 2017 any change in the sort of budget stalemate that we've seen for the past 2 years in the state of Illinois?
I think that's real tough. Really. Madigan still has a solid majority in the House. I mean, they could do some try to do some kind of Hail Marys here and maybe use the lame ducks. But one of those lame ducks would be Jack Franks, right? The guy who just became McHenry County Board Chairman. And he's not going to suddenly flip on a bunch of anti-tax stances that he's taken over the years. So what they have right now in the House is a Democratic supermajority of 71 votes. That's exactly what you need for a supermajority.
Right. And in the veto session, the lame duck session
here. Yeah, yeah. For a, you know, overriding
and that includes Ken Duncan. Yeah, he's
right.
He's not going to go
right.
for it. Right.
Right. So, you know, you've
they
got,
don't have it.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to change the way things are going.
But
down
does
there.
The public, does the public at all stand up a little bit and scoff at the concept of the way the government's been run in the last, or at least the political fights, where it's a unbalanced budget that's given to Governor Rauner who vetoes it, and then we do it again, and we do it. I mean, is there a point where we get involved? I mean, obviously that's elections, and we saw
right.
that, but is there a point where we say, enough is enough? No, you can't give the unbalanced, and you can't keep saying, you know, get rid of the unions. It's like you can't,
yeah.
There has to be some balance here.
I think there's two really important things that Governor Rauner needs to do right now. I think if you don't want to see two more years and you want to get reelected, then you have to find a way to work with Madigan and get something done. And I think we saw a little pivot in the way his campaign group or PR group ran him when he suddenly, after 2 years, started doing interviews with the media and made himself accessible other than to just certain conservative talk show hosts. But he actually started coming out. And I think the tide's turning a little bit where he knows that he holds the highest office, and that means he's accountable because the publicity has been very negative against him. So my hope is for the next 2 years that'll change. And in terms of the movement, here's the biggest thing that I don't understand that maybe the two of you can help me with, is we have the worst pension crisis that we are facing. That is 10% of the population of those people get those pensions. And I understand that people want to get what was promised to them, but 90% of the people in Illinois are funding those pensions, and it's unsustainable. So why is there not more of a movement from the majority of the people
system.
In Illinois to change this? Because we know, look, we can't break the taxpayers anymore to pay for it, and something has to be done. Why is there not more support then for Governor Rauner?
Well, that's a simple question, a very good question that takes a lot of answer. but one of the things, I think one of the, at the root of all this is that to change that pension system and to change that pension payment bill cycle that we're under, that is hanging over Illinois, they have to change the Constitution. And to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot to change the pension, you've got to have that proposed by the legislature. And the legislature is loath to do that. And so you really are in a jam here, unless you get people or a set of lawmakers who have decided, look, we've got to break the promises that we gave to people. We've got to say, look, your pension promise is not a promise that we can keep, and we won't pay you the full freight that you were promised. Then we're not going to see any changes on that.
Yeah, it really does come down to the Constitution, and we've seen been very hesitant to make any change to that Constitution in anything from term
right.
limits down the
right.
line. There really is that's a hands-off document in the state of Illinois.
But as to your point, Justin, where's the public outrage on that?
It's a great question. It would be interesting to see what happens here, especially since every time they do put some sort of reform forward, the state Supreme Court knocks it down. So. Not looking as if that's something that, but I do agree. I think the Constitution might be the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have to change that either through the legislature or a constitutional convention, and those are really the two avenues. And when you get to steps like that, it gets too complicated for the public to really rally fast enough, because there'll be too many people making swift moves or blocking it here and there.
To the money, if this was a test ground for what Governor Rauner's money can do with mm-hmm. four seats, you mm-hmm. know, in the House and two in the Senate, maybe, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's real interesting. We have the Trump effect downstate, obviously, that helped knock out a couple of the lawmakers there. We saw two Republican-oriented districts, one around LaSalle County and one in Jack Frank's McHenry County seat, that were given up by Democrats, and appointed Democrats could not hold those. And so you go in there thinking, well, those are two likely Republican wins. They won three more seats. They lost one. So, yeah. You know, it's tens of millions of dollars on both sides for
That's Ray Long. He's the former Springfield bureau chief for the Chicago Tribune, now an investigative reporter. Lauren Cohn, who is the co-host of In Loop on WYCC, which you can see on Thursdays as well as rebroadcast on the weekends. I can't thank you guys enough. This was great. The hour flew by.
Great to be here.
Got to have you back. Thanks for being here tonight.
Appreciate it. Enjoyed it. Thank you.